You're listening to The Grapevine on 99.3 County FM. I'm Lynn Pickering, and we continue our special series of interviews for Black History Month with my co-host, retired Senator Don Oliver. Our guest today is Tiffany Callender, co-founder and CEO of the Federation of African Canadian Economics, or FACE. It's a national and bilingual Black-led nonprofit organization focused on providing resources to the Black community across Canada with the aim of accelerating wealth creation. In 2020, in support of the United Nations International Decade for People of African Descent, Tiffany Callender was named in the top 100 of the most influential people of African descent under 40 worldwide. Over to you, Senator Oliver.
Oh, thanks for that, Lynn. Well, Tiffany, you've had an exceptional career already in your young life, and I'm sure there's a lot more to come. But before we talk about Black History Month, I want to hear a little bit more about your exciting background as well. I know that your parents came from Barbados and you grew up in Montreal. What was it like growing up in Montreal?
Well, I grew up in Montreal with a brother and a sister. So I'm the middle kid of three. And Montreal is a dynamic city. There's a lot of culture. There's a lot of different people from different backgrounds. But what I was really afforded the opportunity to do is be a part of a Black community here. So my parents had me involved in, you know, a church where there's a mostly Black congregation. I went to Black day camps. That was my first job. So my experience in Montreal, one of the most diverse cities in Canada, was also one where I got to, you know, unapologetically explore who I am as a Black woman and a Black Canadian. So this is It's great. Montreal is diverse, and I really appreciate the experience that I had here with my family.
Tell me, how important was education to your family, and particularly speaking French?
Oh, it was education is everything. From a family from Barbados, education is probably top notch. It's one of the things that's most talked about. It's our main goal. My mom used to say, we go to work, you go to school, right? So education was very important. But my mom and my dad migrated in the late 70s to Montreal. And then thereafter, there was the change with Bill 101, where French became really the functioning language of Quebec. And this is where my mom had to make a very important decision, whether she was going to send us to French school or use our eligibility criteria certificates. And she said, no, you're going to go to French school. You're going to learn French, because she didn't want us to have any barriers to employment or opportunities later on down the road. So I remember when she went to Woolworths at the time, she bought an English-French dictionary and she would translate our homework. So for me, my brother, and my sister, word for word, so that she could understand and explain. So she was a pioneer, and education has always been very important. And she herself works with special needs kids. My dad is an electrician, so learning is a big part of our family dynamic. So, and a desire to want to learn more. They really instilled that at home.
You mentioned that you had a brother and a sister. Tell us a little bit more about them.
Well, interestingly enough, my sister studied finance and she was a banker. I pulled her over to nonprofit a few years ago. So she also runs a nonprofit organization that works towards the social development and the wellness of Black communities in Quebec. So I brought her over to my side. And my brother, he's studying to do his EMBA in Toronto. So he's a business guy, a tech guy. He lives in Toronto. He's living the bachelor life. But my sister and I both live in Montreal. We are moms. So our kids are growing up together. So, you know, family first. It's a great experience to kind of become adults and then see how you fare. I'm sure if you asked her, she'd be like, Tiffany, running a financial? I said, yeah. If it's about helping people, I'll be there. So it's interesting that we've switched a bit.
Now, you have gone to John Abbott College. You've gone to St. Anne de Bellevue in Quebec. You study at Concordia. So where did you go after you got that education? What was the next step up to FACE?
So I actually studied communications, radio and television at John Abbott, and then went into human relations. All of this was exploring what I wanted to do for my adult life. In those journeys at school, in extracurricular activities, this is where I found out that I wanted to help people and I wanted to identify challenges that people had and try to create solutions. So at the time, there was no program for that at university, but I had the opportunity to create my own programs that ended up raising money for national organizations such as National Diabetes or different elements of society where I thought I would want to help. And then working in community centers, that's where actually, so I pivoted away from my education to my parents' shock into the nonprofit sector. And I worked every job at community organizations. So volunteering, governance board, coordinator, manager, to eventually become the executive director of one of the oldest organizations in Quebec. So I learned on the ground. I'm one of those, I'm, I guess, a product of Black community organizations and institutions grooming leadership to work on behalf of the community.
Now, on your way to FACE, you must have encountered some obstacles and you had probably saw some barriers and so on, not only because of color, but also because you're a woman. And can you tell us, when you did encounter those kinds of things, what did you do to get over it? What helped you?
So I would say the thing that helped me first and primarily was I grew up watching parents who were navigating barriers in their own lives, being English-speaking Black people in Quebec, looking at how they could be employed, what they have access to. And what I noticed about both of my parents is that they were very determined. These were not people who got frozen in the challenge. They found a way over, under, around it. And when you have that type of model as a kid, an example, you do the same thing. You replicate or you repeat that behavior. And it was a positive one. So coming in as a woman in leadership, I was the second executive director of the BCA in Côte-des-Neiges. They never had a lot of women lead nonprofit organizations that were target specific, no less. So I had to learn how to find common and mutually beneficial objectives, learn to have people buy in, make sure that I was able to present why this would benefit everybody and not just the community. So it's building that skill set and just not giving up. I learned that from my parents, and I hope I'm teaching that as well to my children. There's a solution for everything. You just have to be determined to get to it.
You have now found a job, head of FACE, which has millions and millions of dollars. And can you tell us a little bit about what you're going to do with that money and how is it going to help the Black community?
Absolutely. So the Federation of African Canadian Economics is the culmination of bringing together different service organizations and their leadership to build an organization that would create an alternative pathway to accessing capital and non-financial resources for Black entrepreneurs, founders, and business owners. The reason why this is going to help Black Canadians is because there is a gap that exists in terms of us being able to build generational wealth that's historic, and that also exists in the current framework of a lot of institutions that exist. Working towards equity is something that I've done my whole career, and the new vehicle is through economic development. So with FACE, who's been mandated under the Black Entrepreneurship Program to administer a loan fund of $160 million, our job is to fund Black businesses across the country to allow for them to start up or scale up. And how this is going to help Black Canadians and the Black community build wealth is by addressing a few things. One, it's creating these companies that then can become job creators to hire within our own community to address the high unemployment rate that we have. It gives us the opportunity to give an entry point to newly arrived Black community members who might not have an opportunity to build in their first generation this pathway towards creating wealth and longevity and opportunities for their children. It's an opportunity for us to collect the non-existing data on what it is to be a Black Canadian and where are the pain points and how do we develop strategies, but also influence policy and influence how government can now make a way for Black Canadians to catch up and for us to have a level playing field and really create a destiny that is our own. Through this program, it doesn't just include FACE. There are other organizations that are assigned to work. I would love to see youth strategies happen. To date, we have 26,000 users on our platform. We only started May 31st, 2021. And in that data, we can source how many youth are there. So we have 8% of the applicants and users are 18 to 30 years old. We have 36% that are women. We have 18% that are consider themselves newly arrived immigrants, meaning within the last 5 years. Data is power. So with that, we can help other organizations to build target-specific programming that'll help to address the challenges that those groups see. And this is really how we're going to have a good knowledge transfer and infusion of best practices.
Could you tell me a little bit more about the structure of FACE? Is there a board of directors? Who is it? What's their powers?
We are a federally registered nonprofit, and we do have a board of directors. We currently have 9 board members, and we are recruiting to complete at 15. This includes the founding member organizations. So the original organizations that came around the table to create FACE, they have representation from those organizations. And I think this is important because it addresses regionality in terms of this strategy. It's to make sure that from all the way from Halifax over to Vancouver, we have representation to ensure that they can tell us what are the needs of Black entrepreneurs in those parts of Canada. We also have academia that has joined us on our board, as well as accountants and bankers. The idea is to bring the best of these sectors to develop a model that can better suit and support Black business owners. So beyond the board of directors, we have a senior leadership team, a C-suite, and we are now opening, we opened our doors in May. We already have 15 employees. So we've kind of started and scaled quite quickly, which is good news. And we're able to, and I'm glad to say today, we've already loaned $11.1 million to a Black Canadian. So this is a
That's
great
incredible.
Initiative. Yeah.
That's incredible. Well, look, now I'd like to ask you a little bit about Black History Month. Do you think that it's doing any good at all? We have February, which has been for some years now set aside as a time for Black people. But is it doing any good at all?
Well, I would say that there's so many people in our community that have fought. I think of the Honorable Jean Augustine and who have fought to make sure that this holiday is recognized. And it gives a chance for our country to hyper-focus on the contributions of Black Canadians and Black people worldwide. The only thing that I would like to see Black History Month extend to is to start looking to the future. So it's great to use this month to look at, well, look first of all, beyond the transatlantic slave trade, but really look at the contributions of Black people to humankind and to broaden that scope and to sensitize and educate the community, that the wider community, that our history did not begin with our Maafa. What we have is a rich history of people. Now, the Black people in Canada, when we discuss Black History Month, what we should be looking at is what are we doing going forward? What does the future look like? What do we want to bring into our communities? What is the destiny that we want? And I think that that's what would make Black History Month dynamic, but also would extend it past February 28th, because then you're in a full action plan, right? If you're talking about the future, now you've got a plan, you can start to action things, and then we come back every February to talk about how far we've advanced instead of just looking backwards.
Tell me, are there any sectors of our Black lives that are not really being displayed in February during Black History Month?
Of course, so much. As diverse as Black people are on this planet, we've touched every segment of human life. So I think that there has to be an emphasis on our contribution to the sciences there, and how that leads to today as we go into technology. Well, we have to look at what has been our contributions to mathematics and all of these things. So I think that we definitely have to open up the spectrum of what we recognize as Black excellence. Although I don't love that statement, but in fact, we are excellent. And there's so much history that's untold. And although we are often demonstrated for our great contribution to the arts, we've done so much more. And if we want our kids to see themselves as more, they have to know that they come from that story. It's not foreign to them. And the other thing I would say is that we often hyper-focus on the African-American experience. Although it is a beautiful story, there's so much for us to learn about here in Canada, what Black Canadians have done and have contributed, and where you can go and find out more. You have to talk about the Caribbean and the continent. We have to kind of connect this idea of the diaspora so that we can get a full sense of pride, and people will also see us as much fuller than just where we're at or what happened in the last 400 years.
You mentioned before that we should be looking at our future and in Black History Month. Can you tell us a little bit more about your view on that?
Yes. So before I became the CEO of FACE, I worked in community centers. So you could imagine working with youth, teens, parents, seniors even. And the one commonality that's there is there's this desire to know more about who I am. And that question of who I am really dictates who you will become or who you want to be. So I made it a point in my career to kind of make sure that I would dig and go a little bit beyond the famous stories, and they're important. You know, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Rosa, all of those things are so important, but there's so much more that happened in and around these different time periods. So I think that it's important for us to make sure that we dig past the surface, right? We should not let the things that are familiar to us excite us. We should let the things that are unfamiliar to us excite us. Because if you look down the rabbit hole of the Black experience, you will fall in and you'll fall in love because it almost has no bottom. So I think that if we really want to understand who we are as Black Canadians or our beginnings here, you have to start in Nova Scotia and talk about the migration and the four major migrations into that place, and then how the porters, the story that carried us to migrate across the country. So again, my childhood afforded me to know these things. I got to work in my whole career in this space. And I would love for people to have that same access to knowing who they are and who they come from.
At the core of what you're doing is a drive for generational wealth for Black people. And by looking at sustainable economic resources. Mm-hmm. And can you tell us how you see that unfold, say, over the next decade?
Absolutely. So the reason why we named ourselves the Federation of African-Canadian Economics is because entrepreneurship is a subset to economics. It is an opportunity for us to create a pathway to build generational wealth. When I think about people starting a company and then perhaps growing and scaling that company, becoming job creators, hiring people within their own community. So addressing underemployment to people who from their own communities, when you think of the skill set that is then amassed. And then of course, passing that actual business down to their own children and us creating legacy companies, going from having micro businesses to having, you know, small to medium sized businesses will make a huge impact. Not only to our community, but to the Canadian economy at large, especially in this recovery period.
One of the main stories I would like to leave from this interview is that you have been hugely successful, and you come from a family with a brother and a sister and a mother and father who are loving and warm and so on. But the base of it all, education, has just been very, very important. What do you say to Black people about in Black History Month about the importance of education?
Well, I think that we have to understand that the keys to us developing who we want to be is often rooted in education. And that's informal education, that's one vehicle, but it's also exploration of knowledge. So one of the things that was also embedded in my home was explore, read, put yourself in a space to absorb as much information as possible. And like my dad would say, log it, because you might need it at some point. So I think the message I would give to people who are listening, because I'm a mother, is that I try to make sure that my home is a place where kids can explore. So giving them access to books and giving them access to content that allow for them to kind of, you know, absorb as much as they can. And through that, they can then find what is the thing that I'm passionate about? What is the thing that I most want to know about? And that could lead to either a career or becoming a business owner. You know, that could be the next big thing if the child is just exposed to enough. So any community is built first and primarily by the micro community, which is your home. So no matter what your family dynamic is, whether you have one parent, two parents or anything, it takes a community to make sure that we're making sure that our families are sound, because that's the first classroom and the first environment where kids start to explore who they can be and believe it.
That's excellent advice. And I really thank you for that. It's been wonderful having you on today. And I've learned a lot. You have a great history. And as I said at the beginning, you're very young. You've already done exceptional things. And we're all sure there's going to be a lot more. In this Black History Month 2022, I want to wish you all the best and good luck
Thank you so much, Senator Oliver. You have to know that this is a moment that I'll remember. You're somebody that I learned about and taught kids about at the community center. So it's so wonderful to have this conversation with you. I appreciate it so much. And I really, really hope that whatever I do in my career, it builds off of your wonderful legacy that you've contributed to us as Black Canadians. So thank you.
Well, thank you for that as well.
That was Senator Don Oliver with Tiffany Callender, CEO of FACE, the Federation of African Canadian Economics. To learn more, go to facecoalition.com. Next week, Senator Oliver's guest will be the Honorable May Ann Francis, the 31st Lieutenant Governor of Nova Scotia. You're listening to The Grapevine on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county.